ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्तिश्शान्तिश्शान्तिः हरिः ॐ ॐ मे ब्रह्मन् प्रोटेक्ट् अस् बोत् मे ब्रह्मन् bestow upon us both the fruit of knowledge. May we both obtain the energy to acquire knowledge. May what we both study reveal the truth. May we cherish no ill feeling toward each other. Om, peace, peace, peace be unto all.
So we are discussing the Hindu, what is Hinduism. In this context, I already mentioned that every religion depends upon scriptures. The scriptures are the very lifeblood of these religions. Take away the scriptures, practically nothing remains. In Hinduism, there is only one scripture, which is the foundation, which is the authority, that is called Vedas. By Veda is meant that particular knowledge which cannot be obtained through the ordinary five sense organs. In other words, extra sensory knowledge. These are the basis. We discussed about how many Vedas, how they are divided, what is their application at different stages of life. Now, before we go further, let us recall what we had discussed. What is the purpose of the scriptures? Ajnata Jnapakam Shastram. So let us know what we can never obtain through any other means. So what is it that these Vedas teach us? The most fundamental teaching, essence of the Vedas is, as it were, that we are not what we think we are. We are the divine. And therefore, we must regain back our forgotten knowledge that we are the divine. We are not in bondage. We are eternally blissful, but unfortunately, we are not aware of this fact. The whole scriptures, primary and secondary, only point out to this fact. If this much, if we keep in mind, you know, the essence of the Vedas. Each soul is potentially divine. Therefore, realize your own divinity and be happy ever afterwards. Okay. These Vedas are called fundamental scriptures of the Hindus and not any other scripture. Only these three. Now, in practice, however, these scriptures are obscure, difficult to understand. So these scriptures have been divided into three further parts. These go by the very beautiful name Prasthana Traya. Traya means three. Prasthana means most important. What are those? Upanishads, Brahma Sutras, and Bhagavad Gita. We already discussed about Upanishads. What is the meaning of the Upanishad? That which destroys our wrong knowledge about ourselves and leads us to the right knowledge. It is called Upanishad. Upanishad. What are Brahma Sutras? Sutra is a special kind of literature, very brief, maybe a few words. As an example, Atha Yoga Anushasanam. Now we are going to expound what is called Yoga. Yoga Chitta Vritti Nirodha. Yoga is the suppression of all mental modifications. This is called Sutra literature. Sutra means a thread. Just as a thread. What is the purpose of a thread? A thread by itself is not of much use. It is always used for some other purpose, you know, in a garland. You use the thread to keep all the flowers together. So, Brahma Sutras. Sutra also has another meaning. That which points, a pointer. So, Brahma Sutra. What does this point to? Brahman. Brahman means the ultimate reality. So why Brahma Sutras? What are Brahma Sutras and why? Very briefly, these Upanishads seem to contain various contradictory statements. How do we know? Because there are three important schools of philosophy now. But before this time, there were six important schools of philosophy called darshanas in Hinduism, which I will briefly come to that point later on. So, there are, why six different schools of philosophy? Because the six different people think in six different ways and each claim to be right. Are there contradictory statements in the Vedas? Really, no. Apparently, yes. So, how is it? When we are growing up, the mother tells, don't enter into that room, there is a buchi there, bogeyman. But when we grow up, maybe the same mother, maybe she is a scientist. She says, you know, is God, ghost, afterlife, is all bunk. Never believe in it, much less in a bogeyman. So, is she contradicting herself? No. At this stage, when we are children, we are in danger, endangering ourselves if we go into that room. Therefore, to prevent us, she tells, there is a bogeyman. Because mother says, don't go, the first thing that we do is to go. Human nature, you know. Vedas, scriptures, do not contain contradictory statements. They contain complementary statements, which means they give food suitable to different stages or understanding capacity of the person who needs them. But now there are fanatical people say, no, scripture only teaches this. So go on quarreling. And probably, even at the time, thousands of years ago, these quarrels were there. So Vedavyasa, the author of this Brahma Sutras, what he did, he took out all those seemingly contradictory statements and put them, this is the one controversy, this is the second controversy, this is the third controversy, and tried to make a sense out of it. To tell primarily these two facts. First fact, Vedas, Vedic teachings do not contradict themselves. They are systematic and they are whole, they are one in meaning, there is no contradiction at all. And secondly, to point out the fact that every teaching which seems to be contradictory serves some purpose for somebody to uplift him. A child is given one type of teaching, a young man is given another type of teaching, an old man is given another type of teaching. He wanted to point out. This literature, Brahma Sutra, has become very important, especially for the philosophers. For ordinary people, do not even go to that book. That is the second book. The third book is called Bhagavad Gita. You know Mahabharata? You heard about Mahabharata. Bhagavad Gita forms part of the Mahabharata. Very few people are there who didn't hear about Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita is, it is called Bhagavad Gita, means song. Song sung by whom? By God Himself. When God sings a song, what do you think He will sing? Come on, think. You see a young man in blooming youth and he sees a young woman, what is the song that comes out? A child is going and he sees a toy shop and he sees something which he likes, what is the song he bursts into? Teddy bear, twinkle, twinkle, little star, I wonder what you are, etc., etc. But when God sings a song, what do you think He will sing? There is only one song He can sing. I am God, I am God, there is no other words. Aham Brahmasmi, Aham Brahmasmi, Aham Brahmasmi. So the whole Bhagavad Gita, what is the essence? That I am God. And what about me? Oh Lord, good Lord. He said, there is no you. There is only me. You are also God. I am also God. Everything is God. I am not saying this. It is the Lord who said this. He said, Bahunam Janmanamante Jnanavan Mam Prapadyate Vasudeva Sarvamiti Samahatma Sudurlava. After many, many lives of spiritual practice, the realization comes, everything is nothing but God. Vasudeva Sarvamiti. Everything is God. That is the essence of Gita. I will come to that point a little later. These are the three books, Upanishads, Brahma Sutras, and Bhagavad Gita. These constitute the very basis of Hinduism. Now we have spoken about Vedas, also Upanishads. I will not speak about Brahma Sutras and other things. So the Hindu scriptures are divided, as I said, into two, primary and secondary. So before we enter into the secondary scriptures, I have to recollect. Vedas are, by Veda means suprasensory knowledge. Vedas, this knowledge is eternal. It's an interesting point. Knowledge is eternal. Any knowledge is eternal. So therefore, you cannot create knowledge. You know, so you can combine certain things, but you cannot invent things because the things are already there. Swami Vivekananda gives an example. The law of gravitation. Who discovered the law of gravitation? So, did he invent it? He didn't invent it. It was there. Even if there is not a single human being, the law of gravitation would always be there. But we didn't understand what it is until this person came along and pointed it out to us. So he is not an inventor, he is a discoverer, uncoverer. So how does it happen? God exists. This world is nothing but God. And therefore, when God exists, does he exist for a short time or eternally? He exists for eternity. Therefore, the knowledge of God is eternal. That is what Veda is meant. When we say Vedas are eternal, it means the knowledge of God is eternal. Because God is eternal, the knowledge about God is eternal, the rest is slowly we discover that knowledge. And the discoverer of that knowledge is called a sage, a rishi. That's all. So, what is the point? The point is Vedas are eternal because knowledge is eternal and it is not human construct. No knowledge is a human construct. We can at best take some combination. We only combine certain things among the objects which already are there. We are discoverers. We are not inventors. So from that point of view, Vedas are eternal. Non-human constructs. Sages are only the discoverers. And this is the foundational, most important scriptures. Every other scripture is secondary scripture. This secondary scripture is called Smriti. The primary scriptures are called Shruti. Shruti means heard or realized and passed on from year to year. Guru Parampara system, GPS system. Smriti means memory. It's a wonderful word. Why are the secondary scriptures called Smritis, memory? You know, what's a wonderful thing? You, for example, you see something for the first time. Then it becomes an experience. Means you have experience means you have some knowledge. This object I didn't know before, now I know. Thereafter, how does that knowledge reside within us? In the form of memory, smriti. The Vedic sages, they have given us the right knowledge about God, afterworld and afterlife. Three things. About God, about afterlife, about afterworld. There are other types of worlds. Naturally, somebody has committed great sin. He must go there and get to. It is called barbecued. Why can't he be barbecued here? There is a problem. What is the problem? Once you barbecue, there is no way to barbecue him second time. But the other place has some magic. You know, barbecue him and dip him in another tub. Immediately he will come back to life. So you can you can barbecue him again and again and again. So that is called hell. So also, somebody had done something wonderful, great, meritorious, unselfish act. So he must enjoy for a long time. So that is called heaven. Do they exist? No. You see, we have to believe in these scriptures. There is no justification. You cannot derive any justice we are looking at this world. So this is what the scriptures are teaching us. So we must have faith in us. But the most important point is not hell or heaven. It is about our own divinity. These, all these secondary scriptures, they are called secondary in the sense, they are not editions, but they are a reformulation of Upanishadic teachings in an accessible form. This way they are called secondary scriptures. How many of these secondary scriptures are there? I forgot to mention one thing. Let me go through this again. Vedas, I said, Vedas, primary Vedas. There are what is called Veda Anga, that is subsidiary Vedas are there. The purpose of these subsidiary Vedas is to facilitate right understanding of these Vedas. That's why they are called Veda Angas. What are these? There are Siksha, means phonetics, the science of phonetics. Vyakarana, science of grammar. Then Chandas, that means prosody, how to make poetry, how to understand poetry, etc. Then Nirukta, etymology. Etymology means what is the correct meaning of this particular word. You see, correct meaning of a particular word is very, very important, especially in languages like Sanskrit. Sanskrit is an etymological based language. Means every word has its meaning. And that meaning has to be understood in right context. Otherwise, there is going to be a big problem. The word must be interpreted correctly. It is a very important issue in the interpretation of the Vedas. The same word in different context can mean different things. Same word. For example, you know, in Sanskrit we give an example. Village. So this village is an empty place. So you go to some village and then you see there is nobody there practically. You see, it is empty. The village is empty. What are you referring to? The place. Then there is a Ramakrishna birthday festival. The whole village went. What do you mean by this? The whole earth, its foundations got up and went. What does it mean? It means the people living in that village, though the word used is village, the meaning is the people living in that village went to attend a festival. So there is a third meaning, which means both the place and also avoid that village where people are not devotees of God. So what does it mean? Do not go to that place. Also, do not associate with the people living in that particular. So correct meaning is very important. Nirukta is one which deals with this science of correctly interpreting words. Then Jyotish, astronomy, and also astrology. Why? Because Hindus believe, and many people believe, certain things have to be done at certain particular times. For example, Vedas are full of rituals. So this particular ritual has to be done only on this particular day. For example, you know, to give an example, Ekadashi. When do you have to observe Ekadashi? On Dwadashi? On the 11th day. So you must know when the moon is on the 11th day. You see, 11th day of the moon, it has a lot of significance. People who live near the seashore or near a big river, they understand the meaning of it. Then there are what is called kalpas, which means a certain type of literature, so they can interpret the ritualistic portions of the Vedas very nicely. These are all what we call helps to understand the teachings of the scriptures and perform them correctly, and these are the helps. These are called the subsidiary Vedas. Okay, now we will go further. These secondary scriptures can be subdivided into certain classes. So let me enumerate what they are. The first of all, there is called Dharma Shastra. Have you heard the word Dharma Shastra? Mano Dharma Shastra. Then Itihasas. Itihasa is a kind of history and myth combined together. There are two famous Itihasas, Ramayana and Mahabharata. Then there are Puranas. Hindu literature full of Puranas. Purana is a special type of literature, mythology. It's a kind of mythology, but let us not compare it with what we call Roman mythology, Greek mythology, etc. There is something very, very special. Then, Agamas are tantras, tantric literature. I gave a talk with regard to Sri Ramakrishna's special practice of tantra. It's a special type of scripture. Darshanas. Darshanas means schools of philosophy and lives of saints. This is another subdivision, very important. Lives of saints and their teachings. For example, if devotees of Sri Ramakrishna, what is the most important scripture for them? The gospel of Sri Ramakrishna and the life of Sri Ramakrishna called the great master, or now they change the divine leela play of Sri Ramakrishna. So every devotee has his or her own special type of scriptures. Mostly, you know, very few people have read Vedas. Still fewer people read Upanishads and understood. Mostly it is the local saints who influenced Hindus very much. Then there is another type of literature which has popularized Hinduism among the Hindus. Do you know what it is? Dramas, cinemas, temples, poetry. Dramas. You know, in every village, Jatra, we used to call Jatra, they will take themes from Ramayana, Mahabharata, and enact in the villages. Before the cinemas came, the olden times cinemas, what were they? These dramas. And how did people come to know about what is dharma, what is righteous life, whether you are a divine soul, whether there is a heaven, there is a hell, and all this knowledge, how did we come to know? From these village storytellers, from these dramas. Now, of course, you know, dramas have been technically have been transformed into what is called in much more elaborate, but it's just nothing but audio visual. That's all. Sophisticated audio visual techniques. That's all. It's much more elaborate. You can sit in your home and then you can watch it. Though the thrill of watching a drama is something different. Hinduism had spread because of these dramas, cinemas, poetry, and this type of things. Temples, especially for every Hindu. You will not get a village where there is not a temple. And in every Hindu temple, you will get all the 360,000 gods and goddesses represented. You know, they don't believe in this only bank in the economic system. They believe in so many other things. That is why Hindu's economy has not gone down. So let us now briefly discuss what these are. The first thing that we have said is Dharma Shastras. What are these Dharma Shastras? The Hindu learns how he has to spend his whole life from these special scriptures called Dharma Shastra. Shastra means scripture. Dharma means what are the duties. First of all, Hindu life is divided into four castes, you know, Brahmana, Kshatriya, warrior, and Vaishya, the merchantman, and everybody else who doesn't fall into these three. Four castes. The four castes later on, I will discuss about this also later on, but briefly, it is an inevitable division because all people are not of the same intelligence or capability. So naturally, everybody has to fulfill his own or her own dharma. Then further, a Hindu life is divided into four stages. The student life, the married life, the semi-retired life, and the monastic life. Now what are the duties of these Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Sudras? What should a student do, a married person do, a retired person do, and also a monastic person do? There should be rules, regulations. In the olden times, when we are in the tribal state, these are called taboos. Do certain thing, do not do certain thing. Now they have become much more sophisticated. But we have not become better than tribals. Only we want to be called civilized. As a great man had remarked, scratch the skin of any civilized man. Out comes the savage. with this difference, that the savage could at best destroy only a few lives, whereas the modern man can destroy millions of lives at the flick of a switch. Is it right? You know, this man sits here in front of his console and he bought, say, 40 billion pounds worth of things. How many people are affected? The Lehman Brothers. You know, there will be one or two people who do like this. And millions of lives, it may be in Malaysia, in Singapore, in Australia, in Africa, their lives are destroyed. Literally destroyed. We're not only talking to weapons of mass destruction. These are even more destructive than in physical things. But you cannot go to a court. There must be some guidelines. What to do, what not to do. There are 2 points to be noted here. The first point is for how the whole society is a collection of individuals. Between any given two individuals, there would always be differences of opinion. But there must be some harmony, some understanding, if life has to go on properly. This is one purpose. But the other purpose is not merely societal welfare, how we can evolve spiritually so that we can realize our own true nature. Let us never forget, these Dharma Shastras are not meant for propagating worldly life. They are meant so that life in this world becomes very easy, smooth, what you call energy-saving, time-saving techniques, so that we can pursue our true goal of life, which is spiritual progress. That is the real purpose. These are the 2 points. These are called Dharma Shastras. And there are many, many such scriptures, but briefly, there is one Dharma Shastra, which is very famous among Hindus. You know what is that? Mano Dharma Shastra. Then Yajnavalkya. Then Parashara, then there is another in Bengal, Raghunandana Smriti, it is called Raghunandana. Even today, most of the Hindu law is based upon these books. There are 2 types of law in India. Did you know that? The central government has its own law. And there is a Hindu law is there. So, for Hindus, guidance, we have to follow this Hindu law. So in modern situation, what do we do? Say, as far as secular affair is concerned, follow the government law. As far as spiritual life is concerned, follow the scriptural law, Dharma Shastra. This is our understanding about this. So these are called Dharma Shastras. Then there are itihasas. The meaning of the word itihas, every Sanskrit word, has etymological meaning. The word Sanskrit is also etymological. Samkrita, well done, refined. Samkrita, well done. That becomes Samskrita, what is called the law of sandhi, conjunction. 2 words joined together, there is some change comes. Anyway, so itihasa means iti ha sa. Iti means thus, ha sa means it was like this. Means a kind of history. It happened like this. At that time, it was like this. But we cannot call them historical literature because it has nothing to do with history. This, you must always remember, is part of religious literature. So what is the purpose? The purpose is to illustrate. Take maybe some historical examples and to put before us how those great people had set an ideal before us, how to live. There are 2 such books, which all of us know. One is Ramayana, the story of Rama, and Mahabharata, story of Pandavas and Kauravas. Ramayana, what does it teach? Rama is was an ideal son, ideal brother, ideal husband, ideal father, ideal ruler, ideal friend. He was a great man in every respect. So incidents are given to illustrate these points. And then in Ramayana we get characters like Lakshmana, Bharata, Hanuman, Sita, Sita, Lord Sita Swami Vivekananda used to say, for eternity, she is the ideal of every Hindu wife. So, this is what Ramayana is all about. Then comes Mahabharata. Even from the viewpoint of entertainment, no other scripture equals Mahabharata. You want fight, you get it. You want intrigue, you will get it. You want to kill somebody by poison, you will get it. I mean, whatever you want. But at the same time, the highest spiritual teaching has been given. There are two important parts of this Mahabharata. The one is Vishnu Sahasranama, the thousand names of Vishnu, without reciting which no devotee of Vishnu would ever pass his day. Vishnu Sahasranama, Shiva Sahasranama also is there. And second is, of course, we all know the greatest scripture on earth. What is it? Bhagavad Gita, the teaching of Krishna. This is also, again, as I told, some people ask, well, they're really a Kurukshetra? Yes, not only it was, it is there. Every household has this Kurukshetra now and then. Yeah, Kurukshetra is there all the time. It's ever between two countries, between two parties in the same country, between two in the same family. Is always between two brothers, between husband and wife, between two sisters. What happens every day of our life, that is called Kurukshetra War, Mahabharata War. So this is a fact of life. But the most important thing is, the Bhagavad Gita teaches us how we should be victorious in this battle. It is not saying there is a way to avoid battle. Never said that. There will always be, but as long as there is life on earth, there will be battle. There will be war, warfare. Do not be idealistic and say, do not look for what is called utopia, paradise. One day will come, everybody will be only playing harps. That's not going to happen. There will be wars, but there is it. Somebody will become victorious. How to become victorious? But not by hook, not by crooked means. But there is a technique. And that technique is called living a spiritual life. That is the teaching. Wonderful book. This has been the most widely popular book, next probably to Bible. In so many languages it has been translated and read and appreciated. Thousands of commentaries have come upon it, including Sri Ramakrishna's own comment, which is the shortest commentary on the Bhagavad Gita. What is the commentary? Reverse the word Gita. O man, renounce your falsity, false nature. Renounce your egotism and realize your true nature. That is the most wonderful comment. The whole gospel is nothing but an essence, an elaboration of Bhagavad Gita. As I mentioned in my last class, you know, if you have not read Vedas, do not worry. Because if you read Upanishads, they are the essence of the Vedas. If you have not read the Upanishads, do not worry. Because if you read Bhagavad Gita, you have read all the Upanishads. If you have not read Gita, do not worry. If you have read the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna, or Swami Vivekananda's teachings, you have read Gita, you have read Upanishads, you have read all the Vedas. You have read all the scriptures of all the world. This is the simple truth. So Bhagavad Gita, to be very brief, consists of around 700 shlokas. It is divided into 18 chapters. And the essential teaching of the Bhagavad Gita is the teaching of the Upanishads, which is to say, thou art that. Thou art the divine. Realize this, become free. The rest is elaboration. That is the final goal. Whether you like it or not, evolution is taking us to that goal. But this goal can be attained through any religion, through any path. That is the speciality of the Gita. Through any path. You be a devotee, or you be a selfless worker, or you are a meditator, or you use knowledge, your intellect. By whichever means is all fine. You will reach ultimately the same goal. So do not quarrel. You are a Muslim, You are a Hindu, you are a Christian, you are of no religion, religious, what is called stamp. Sri Ramakrishna used to use funny words, mark mara, you know, stamp. I am a Vaishnava, do you know, is a big three religion. I am a worshipper of Shiva, do you know, three big, you know, lines, a cross will be there. Don't worry, do not worry about outside people trying to recognize you. In fact, you know, it is very good mark for a while. Oh, this fellow is coming, let us go the other way. So the essence is this most liberal teaching of Hinduism. What is the first discovery? Ekam sattvipraha udhavadanti. Truth is one, sages call it by various names. A rose is a rose by whatever name you call it. So what religion you travel, which name of God you call upon, doesn't really matter. What matters is, have you reached the goal? Are you going towards the goal? Are you becoming better person, unselfish, happier? That is the only thing that counts. These teachings are there in the Bhagavad Gita, and they are the teachings which practically every sage and saint in India propagates. Sri Ramakrishna used to say, that a devotee may not have any book, but if he has got one book, that is enough. What is that book? Bhagavad Gita. Yes. These are the two, Ramayana and Mahabharata. And of recent times, you know, that's about 20 years back, these films have been taken, Ramayana and Mahabharata. How popular they have become. So these are the itihasas. Then come Puranas. These are wonderful things. So you know, the word Purana means mythology. But as I said, do not compare these at all with this Greek mythology. How many Puranas are there? There are 18 main Puranas are there. These Puranas, I have to say, are really the scriptures which influenced the whole of Hinduism, a whole Indian continent. We are not followers of Upanishads. We are not followers of Bhagavad Gita. We are followers of Puranas. This is the simple truth. Because nice stories. What do these contain? There are five parts in every Purana. I'm using the word Sanskrit word. Purana, you can use it as mythology. First of all, contains facts, certain things, you know, such and such a king was born at such and such a time, etc. Cosmology, how this creation has come, how it continues, how it is going to end. And it is from these Puranas we get the idea that there are four time periods. We call them Yugas. The age of truth. The age of third age, when the truth and righteousness come down a little. Then Dwapara Yuga, when it comes down three-fourth. And now we are in the last stage. It is called Kalikala, materialistic age. So this is from our Puranas. And also it is threatening type of prognosis. It's an apocalypse. What happens is a fire, you know, will rain. Huge boulders, burning at 1000 degrees Celsius will fall on your head. And so many things will happen. And the Siamese twins will be born. And a cow with 500 heads will be born. All these predictions and all these things will be coming. They're all told. Anyway, cosmology. Then secondary creation. How other people also have contributed to this creation. In genealogy of kings, for example, you know, Harishchandra, how his lineage had come down. There's the moon, the sun. In India, there are two important genealogy. The sun and the moon. Most of the kings, they claim that either they are born from the sun or the moon. Then who is your grandfather? Who is your... In Bible also you get, you know, the house of David. Who was the David? Of David was born so and so. Of him is born so and so. Goes on and on and on for 10 pages. That may be more, I don't know. Then, who is the ruler? Hindus believe at a particular age, one particular great spirit will be ruling our world. So it's called, the person who rules such a world is called Manu. We are called Manushya or Manava. The children born of Manu are called Manavas. So another meaning of this word is we are the subjects of this particular ruler. So there is a Manu is there. We are all under his protection. This is the, what is called, one of the teachings. That is not important. What is important is the Vedic teachings, means the Upanishadic teachings. They have to be put in a very homeopathic formation with nice, sweet covering and all that. That is what the mythologies advance. Of these Puranas, there are 18 main Puranas are there, and I don't need to really go into those things, but just to give you some important Puranas, I will mention the name of two or three. One is called Bhagavata Purana, Bhagavata. Another is Vishnu Purana. It is not very famous, but among Vaishnavas it is very famous. Then there is a Linga Purana, Shiva Purana, Devi Purana, etc. Puranas, mythology, 18 are there. Then there are 18 what we call Upa Puranas, smaller type of Puranas are there. But the theme is exactly the same, how to propagate the spiritual teachings of these Upanishads in the form of malleable, you know, stories, legends, inspiring. There are some of the people whom these mention may also be historical figures, but the point is we should not rely upon them as a historical fact. As I mentioned many times, for a Hindu, history has only one meaning. What is the meaning? His story, God's story, not any king's story. History means his story, that's all. So Upapuranas are there, but we don't need to go. Then there are special scriptures called Tantras. Agamas are Tantras, Tantric literature. It's a very special type of literature. Why this literature? So let me tell you, among Hindus, all Hindus can be divided into three categories. Those who worship Vishnu, called Vaishnava. Those who worship Shiva, called Shaiva. Those who worship the Divine Mother, called Shakta, Shakti worshippers. So these Tantric literature again is divided into these three. Those books which praise and propagate the glory, greatness of Vishnu, and those who propagate the glory of Shiva, and those who propagate the glory of Shakti, the Divine Mother. So this is only brief background I am giving. All the Hindus can be divided into worshippers of these three forms of God, and these scriptures are also divided into these three types, these Puranas, these Agamas, and each will tell you how to worship God, how to make hymns to Him, how to worship Him, how to get special powers from Him, etc., etc., etc. Just in brief, I have to mention one thing. This Tantric literature, especially of the belonging to the Divine Mother, has got very bad name because they are known as very popular black magic script. You can kill a person. If you don't like him as your colleague, you can throw him out. If you have a troublesome neighbor, repeat this mantra, he will sell his house to you. I'm not joking. Really, there are these powerful mantras are there which can accomplish this purpose. But if we do something wrong, we also must be prepared to reap the consequence of it and suffer as a result. Then there are another type of literature called darshanas. Darshana means various schools of philosophy. In the past, there were six types of philosophy: Sankhya and Yoga, Nyaya and Vaisheshika, Purva Mimamsa and Uttar Mimamsa. Now, all of them have been superseded by Vedanta. Vedanta is the philosophy that rules India now. But Vedanta again is divided into three schools: the dualistic, the qualified non-dualistic, and the non-dualistic. Dvaita, Visishta Dvaita, and Advaita. Now, very briefly to tell you, it looks confusing, but there is no confusion. I can make it very, very clear. Dvaita, dualism. Visishta Dvaita, qualified non-dualism, and non-dualism. How to understand? Very easy. Imagine there is a room, and a rat was moving about, foraging for food. You know, do you know what is philosophy? Have you ever heard what is called definition of philosophy? Philosophy is searching in a dark room for a black cat which is not there. Philosophy is to find out answers for certain things which are beyond our human ken, these three schools of philosophy. Imagine a room, a dark room, and a rat is foraging for food, and then a cat saw it and jumped into the room through the window, right? So how many are there in the room? The cat and the rat, two are there. That is called dualism. After some time, the cat caught hold of the rat and swallowed it. Where is the rat now? Inside the cat. That is called qualified non-dualism. After a few hours, there is only cat. That is called non-dualism, Advaita. Cat alone is there now. You understand that? You understood all the three schools of Indian philosophy. There were great teachers who propagated. They are not the founders of this. All these ideas have been taken from the Upanishads and they have been elaborated. Which is right? This question is not right, because it is not the question of which is right, which is wrong. Which is most suitable for our development? When we are with initial stages, what is reality for us? I am different, you are different. When we have grown morally and spiritually, then we are both united and also separated. As humanity, we are one. As individuals, we are different. But when we realize the truth, that what is our real nature? We are the Atman. Then there is no I or you or anybody. There is only the Atman. There is only God. This is the simple truth. This most marvelous teaching has been taught by Sri Ramakrishna, by Swami Vivekananda. And there is one famous teaching of Sri Ramakrishna. Through an illustration, he illustrates the viewpoint of these three schools of philosophy. Once somebody asked Hanuman, a great devotee of Rama, what is your attitude towards God? And he replied, when I think I am the body, you are my master, I am your servant. When I think I am the individual self, then you are the whole, I am the part. But when I think that I am the Atman, there is no difference between you and me. Deha buddhya tu dasoham, jiva buddhya tu damshakah, atma buddhya tvamayavet iti me nischita matihi. This is the essence. So this dualism, qualified non-dualism and non-dualism are not three conflicting types of philosophy vying with each other, but there are three stages of which non-dualism is the final stage of realization. This is the truth about it. So there's a vast amount of literature has come to defend, to explain, to elaborate these three points of view. And nobody, no ordinary devotee would ever bother his head about this philosophical point of view. But what is good, all these three schools of philosophy have evolved a system of spiritual practice, how they can attain the goal through that particular discipline. So that is most important. Those who are dualists, those who are qualified non-dualists, they have it. Of these three schools of philosophy, again, the only very few really follow the system of non-dualism. Most of us are dualists. That is why Ramakrishna said that the best path suited for us is the path of devotion combined with selfless service. So these are the most important parts. This for the first, and all the Hindu scriptures are divided into, as I said, two parts. The primary part is called Shruti. The secondary part is called Smriti. This is Smriti. It is completely dependent. That is why it is called secondary, means not additional. Secondary means dependent scripture. And it is only an elaboration in accessible human language to most of us, in the form of stories, code of conduct, and all those things, elaboration of these things. And these are divided into this Dharma Shastras, code of conducts, itihasas, or a kind of historical books, Puranas, mythologies, agamas are tantras, darshanas are schools of philosophy, and there is one last. What is that? Most important. Hinduism has spread and is influenced and will be influenced by this particular thing. What is that? lives of saints. Every corner of India has produced its own particular saints. And that particular saint is the person who becomes the most important instrument in interpreting, say, the teachings of Gita or Upanishads and puts it in his own words or her own words and propagates it. Just to mention to you, for the moment, you know, there are a few very important, very what is called charismatic religious leaders in India. Can you recollect your mind? Who is the first one? The greatest Sai Baba. Millions and millions all over the world who are influenced are influenced by him. Even now he is a very, very powerful figure. What opinions you have about him, that's a different issue. But he is the holding millions of devotees. Okay, the second is recently one saint, the hugging saint, Amritanandamayi. He is the most popular. Then occasionally they will come. I say Mahesh Yogi, who propagated transcendental meditation. Then Rajneesh or Osho, what they call, he also had influence on a lot of people. So these are the two very influential people. And there is another, substantially, not so much, but less, Sri Ravi Shankar from Bangalore. This, what I am trying to tell you is, Hindus learn of Hinduism, not directly through the books, but through the teachings of these saints and these their teachings. And probably in every religion, it is the saints who influence more than the books themselves. And the books get their authority from where? From these saints. Why do we revere Bhagavad Gita and Upanishads? Because Sri Ramakrishna praised Bhagavad Gita so much. Why do we revere Upanishads so much? Because Swami Vivekananda said, I taught nothing but the Upanishads. There must be something. Because we revere these great people, whatever they recommend, that becomes most wonderful. There was one of our Swamis who was very, very, very great, powerful orator, Swami Ranganathananda. So he was a marvelous speaker. He could mesmerize, hypnotize when he speaks. That for 1 hour seems to have gone like 1 minute. So once he was talking about Upanishads, and every Upanishad has its own peace chant. For one of the Upanishads, the peace chant was Purnamadaha Purnamidam. That is also infinite, perfect. This is also perfect. So he talked 1 hour about how that is full and this is full. And one man who was listening to this, highly impressed. So he couldn't contain himself. He went out and met his friends and said, oh, what a marvelous speech I have heard in my life. This is the best speech I heard. His friend asked him, what did the speaker talk about? Oh, he's talking about this and that. You know, these people, they don't know anything about Bhagavad Gita or Upanishads. Even if they know, the books are not that easily understood. But you take up the Gospel of Ramakrishna, very easy to understand. Or take the teachings of Holy Mother or Swami Vivekananda. So what did they do? First of all, they established that living connection, relationship with us, so that we can adore them. And then through that adoration, they have, as it were, extracted the juice, like, you know, scriptures are sometimes compared to sugar cane. So you put in the machine, extract the juice, and when it is given with a pinch of salt, a bit of, you know, tiny bit of lemon drops. So what these people do, they extract, as it were, the essence of the scriptures and present it to us in a most wonderful way. So that is why we are all influenced by them. No scripture rarely inspires persons directly. It is through these intermediaries, the sages, the saints, where you look into your own mind, some great saint, a sage, has influenced you. And through him, you revere the scriptures. Try to understand from his own viewpoint of view. So that is how these saints and sages, and India is very, very fortunate to produce saints and sages throughout history, non-stop. Even now it is producing. Who are the great real saints, not bogus, you know, CV, internet CV. I am a self-realized soul. Visa, MasterCard accepted. Not that type. Real, real saints, it is through them the religion is very much propagated. What I have spoken about this scriptural background of Hinduism, in the briefest, I could go on for many months on the elaborating, but there is no need. If what do all these scriptures really teach? I have already told you, but I am telling you that I have already told you, and I will repeat it. What is that? Once a man asked Shankaracharya, that what is the essence of what you want to convey to us? You have written cart loads of books. Shankara said, if you don't have time, and I also don't have time to explain it to you, he said, in half a sentence I will tell you the essence of all the scriptures, past, present and future. God alone is real, realize. You are God and realize your true nature. That's it. So we will take up a little bit elaboration, certain subjects like what these scriptures really teach, like what is dharma, what are the four stages of life, what are the sacraments, etc., etc., in our future classes.
Shanti, shanti, shanti.